I did watch Heather's today.
Yeah, I just watched it a few minutes ago.
And I guess I should save that, but I mean, I cracked open the well, I didn't really crack open anything because it was a used Blu-ray that I must have bought from Rasputin's before it went out of business or whatever happened to that place. Because I still see the little $7.95 sticker, and I don't imagine I paid that for it. I imagine I traded in a bunch of stuff and, said, "Oh, I like that movie, and I don't have a copy of it. Like, why don't I just get that in exchange or something like that?"
I wanted to be a member of the most powerful clique in school.
Dear Diary, Heather said she teaches people real life.
You were nothing before you met me. You were a Girl Scout cookie.
Does it not bother you that everybody in this school thinks that you're a piranha? Like, I give a shit.
Heather, number one, just look right at me. You a Heather?
No, I'm a Veronica. I don't really like my friends.
I don't really like your friends either.
There are people I work with, and our job is being popular.
Maybe it's time to take a vacation.
I just killed my best friend.
And your worst enemy.
Same difference.
My teen angst has a body count.
This is a tragic thing.
Hallelujah.
We scare people into not being assholes. What did you say, dickhead?
I did not want them dead.
You did too.
Did not. Shut up.
I love my dead gay son.
You are out of control. That knife is filthy.
What do you think I'm gonna do with it? Take out her tonsils? Ha! Is this as good for you as it is for me?
Life can suck!
That's it. We're breaking up.
Like, if we do a comic show, I don't want to read other comics before we talk about the comics we're planning to talk about. And when we do, like, something that we're going to watch, I don't want to sit down and watch, like, another, 5 or 6 episodes of, this anime and then try to watch Heather's or watch Heather's and then get finished and then watch a bunch of anime and have that fresh in my mind instead of Heather's, So it's like I think I end up I don't know if sabotage is the right word, but I end up compartmentalizing and kind of going like, oh, if I do want to do something to entertain myself, it's probably today was a good day to read comics if I did do that, but I didn't. And instead I watched the movie. I watched it with they had like these stupid VH1 pop-ups. And then I watched the commentary, which.
Who's on the commentary? Any of the actors?
The producer, the writer, and the director are on the commentary. And ironically, the VH1 pop-up thing where it kind of gives you like, did you know blah, 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 happened or whatever. I realized watching the commentary after watching that I was like, where are they getting all this, like these factoids from, like who's telling them this? And then when I watched the commentary, I realized everything they said on that commentary was where those pop-ups came from. And I was just like, oh, okay. Like that was a waste of time, but whatever, like that kind of thing.
With your powers combined, we are fan holes.
Go fan holes. Can't believe there's a chat room big enough to hold all of our present bodies. Wow.
Of all the things I missed about the show, I miss Tony being wrong always.
We've already got a me. We don't need another me.
Oh boy, a Bashir episode.
Ah yes, Derek. Lover of lobster women, defender of Starfire's fidelity.
I just want to know who is the consultant. Could he be?
No, I have no heart.
Nobody can relate to a talking cat that eats lasagna.
I'll do it, but I want to be immediately killed afterwards.
Derek, in your Derek lair, do you have a list of that tells you like how to take down the other fan holes? Should we like go crazy?
How does my stupid voice sound?
You sound beautiful.
like 10 times sexier. Good job.
No one gets us because we don't explain it.
Hey guys, welcome back to another schoolerific, suicide-tastic episode of Fan Holes Podcast. Hey, what's up guys? This is Derek, Derek WC. I'm going to be one of your hosts tonight, but I am not alone. I am here tonight with one of my fellow fan holes. Why don't you give a shout out and let everybody know who's here tonight?
Hey, this is Justin.
Yeah, so we're here and we're here to discuss the 35th anniversary, 35 years, 35th anniversary of the feature film Heathers.
Three blind mice. Heather Chandler, Heather McNamara, Heather Duke, Veronica Sawyer.
Why are you such a mega brat?
Because I can be.
The most powerful clique at Westerberg.
God, Veronica, troll much?
Most people would die to get into it.
Heather number one just looked right at me.
I'm worshipped Westerberg, and I'm only a junior.
Veronica would kill to get out of it.
You were nothing before you met me. You were a Girl Scout cookie.
JD has come to answer her prayers.
I'm a no-rest build-up man myself.
We'll kill her.
He's got a way with women. A way with words.
Is this as good for you as it is for me?
Life can suck!
And a very special way with a gun. Veronica can't live with him.
Now! I love my dead gay son.
And she can't live without him.
Is this turnout week or what? I had at least 70 more people at my funeral.
What?
Their meeting was destiny.
That knife is filthy!
What do you think I'm gonna do with it? Take out her tonsils?
Their love has a body count.
Loved you. Coming up here to kill you.
That's it. We're breaking up.
Young love.
Heathers, a killer comedy.
I'm gonna have to send my SAT scores to San Quentin instead of Stanford.
This was something that was on our short list of films to talk about, or at least me, my and Justin's short list to talk about. And that's why it's me and Justin here talking about it. But yeah, like I think we're going to do the usual routine. I mean, for the most part, you know, if you haven't seen Heathers, you should probably fucking go see Heathers because we're going to fucking talk about Heathers. But the simple IMDb synopsis, as is Justin's want, is at Westerberg High, where cliques rule, jocks dominate, and all the popular girls are named Heather, it's going to take a Veronica and a mysterious new kid named JD to give teen angst a body count.
The short summary of the film is that it's about two kids who get revenge on all the cliques in school. It's kind of like a revenge for the nerds type of movie.
So yeah, so that's... that's pretty much Heathers in the bite-sized nutshell. I was telling Justin I didn't quite crack open the plastic on my Blu-ray, but that I at some point must have picked this up on Blu-ray from, I think, the now long... I guess they don't exist anymore. We used to have this chain out here. I mean, I don't know. Maybe the one in L.A. is still open or whatever. I don't know. But there was this chain of places called Rasputin's, and it was like a bunch of, you know, it was basically a used, you know, CD, DVD, you know, used media, you know, shop or whatever. And I always used to take a lot of trips out there when I was in L.A. And then they had a few out here. I think there was like one in San Francisco, and there was one out here near San Leandro and Fremont and a couple other places where I would go to every once in a while. But I don't think they're around anymore. But I still have the little $7.95 like used Blu-ray sticker on it or whatever. So I didn't quite crack open the plastic, but I did watch the Blu-ray. And I know, again, Justin, I know you've been getting into Blu-rays. And as far as I could tell, this Blu-ray for the most part was pretty nicely done. You know, it's a cool way to look at something like this, I think, where, you know, it looks the best it can, you know, I mean, short of, you know, I don't know, 4K HD Heathers, which I don't know exists. Like, I think it's the best possible way you can you can watch the movie in a home environment or whatever. So, I mean, I can attest to that, like the everything looks clean and nice or whatever. I didn't look at any Blu-ray reviews per se, but, you know, I was like, it was nice to just pop in a disc. It didn't have any scratches on it, and it was easy to watch. And I do enjoy this film a lot. I don't know. I mean, I feel like my story is going to be a little different than my regular stories, because I can at least tell you this was not something I saw in the theater.
This movie aged interestingly. It would not be made today.
No. So when Heathers was initially released in March of 1989, it was considered kind of a big flop. So it earned less than $200,000. Even I know that's not a lot in its opening weekend, and ultimately grossed only $1.1 million in the United States over 5 weeks. Just not great. So New World really Video released Heathers on VHS, and then that is where it developed its cult following. So it's definitely the fans that are giving this movie a lot of its love.
I'm curious about you. Like I imagine the same is true for you.
Yeah, I feel like my watching this was like kind of odd circumstances, because I watched this like the last week of high school for me, like right before I graduated. And I was like, man, this is great. And then I felt like, I was like, why couldn't I have watched this like 4 years ago? I felt like I kind of, I don't know, unlocked some kind of like secret to maneuvering through the cliques of high school. I don't know, because like, I mean, I was not a popular kid. I was a geek and a nerd, whatever you want to call me. I was picked on. But I had friends in every little clique. Like, I was friends with stoners and special ed kids and jocks and band geeks and everybody. Like, I had friends in every little circle. And this never really worked out that well for me, because, like, those friends, I'm like, well, they're friends with me, so why can't they be friends with each other? And that never worked. It was always conflict, because, like, my stoner friends wouldn't get along with, like, some of my nerd friends, or my nerd friends wouldn't get along with, like, you know, if I was friends with some cheerleader or some kind of like snobby dude or somebody. Like, it was always chaos.
That thing this afternoon, I'm so angry, it was chaos, fucking chaos.
What are you talking about, huh? I mean, today was great. Chaos is great. Chaos is what killed the dinosaurs, darling.
I always felt like I was being pulled in 1,000 different directions, but I was like, well, what can I do? Like, I'm friends with these people. Like, it is what it is, and you just kind of have to, like, live with it.
Most times, I'd say when I was younger, it was like once a year I had to fucking Batman one punch some dipshit.
Yep, me too.
And then people would stay away from me after that, at least once a year. And then it got to the point where I think I had enough of a rep where people mostly stayed the fuck away from me in high school. Thankfully.
Same here.
Like I
except
had done
one
all
time
that
in high school
already, you know?
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
But what I thought was funny too, is it's like they could have easily moved me and this other guy's lockers early on, and it would have solved the problem. But since nobody did that, it's like we got into a big fight, and then they moved the lockers. Do you know what I mean? And it's like, well, if we hadn't gotten into that fight, then they never would have done that in the first place.
I mean, Michael was talking about this earlier, that people always come up to us like, that movie couldn't be made today. And like, as Michael says, it really had a hard time getting made then, too.
Yeah.
Like,
it
you know,
couldn't
that,
be made then.
Yeah.
It was not. We lucked out,
I mean,
somehow.
Somebody always make in from a studio executive capacity, satires are always a mistake. Nobody wants to make a satire, but sometimes we get to sneak one through. And everybody's saying, oh, it's too politically correct now. I have a thing, when we least expect it, something's going to sneak out. Yeah. Somebody's going to think they're making a science fiction movie, but it really is just a movie that's going to rip our hearts out in a good way.
Yeah, it's always in retrospect that we. It's harder to do satire now because the absurdity of actual real life
political
events,
satire is
you can't you just can't do it. The number one issue that teens have today is depression and anxiety, which, I mean, it's always been there underground, but I think that is more of a current thing because of social media and the keeping up with the, you know, keeping up your veneer and what that is, which didn't.
I don't know. I think the cliquish behavior is just amplified now.
Amplified. So that's brought it.
But
more.
I also feel like we didn't have names for a lot of things back then. Right. We were depressed and we were bullied, but there was no such thing. We didn't call it bullying. We called it going to high school.
Yeah, exactly. Like getting picked on.
There was that movie, the documentary Bully, where they put a camera in the back of the bus and had the, and showed the kids in the bus, and they put this horror music over it. Like, and I'm like, that's the bus.
Have
you ever been on a bus to school? That's the way it is.
This predates all the violent, all the shootings in high school. Yeah. And
did he have to wear a long, dark coat?
Right, did he have to wear a duster coat, you know? Yeah. But that's a tricky one because even I remember on the day of Columbine, I got a call from the New York Times asking for a comment. And I went, I'm not commenting on this. What do I have to do with that? And it was, but that was horrifying. The idea that anybody would make that connection was horrifying. But
it was 10 years later. It wasn't.
Right. And I don't think that the Columbine kids had seen Heathers. They'd made no reference to it. But the idea that you would make a satire which, in which violence was done in high school, that would be, you know, I still stand behind everything that's in the movie, but absolutely. But because we don't condone that kind of thing at all, but it's that makes it tricky.
And now the movie's even got a, you know, it's terrible to say, but a darker, even more brutal tang to it, where it's just like, I feel a little bad, but it makes the movie even more interesting.
It does make it more interesting, but you know,
I'm a genius.
It's also weird, I don't know, to me, because you know I graduated in 2001, but stuff like Columbine was still like in the, you know, the mindset of people. And like, I know I've told you this story. I don't know if it has been on air because it's hard for me to remember. You know, we talk so much, it's hard to remember like what's just off air and what's on the podcast. But not long after Columbine, like two of my friends, they were like, some kind of like weird rumor got started that like they were separately going to like do something. And I was like, that's bullshit. Like, I know these guys, they're, you know, they're weirdos, but they're cool weirdos. They're not like, they're not like JD in this movie. They like D&D. They're weird. They're smart alecks, but they want to be left alone. Like, they're not going to hurt anybody. But somehow these rumors got started and they had to like go to like counseling. And then the police actually like came to school and were checking out my one friend's locker. And like people were calling him like all these mean names. And I was like, I don't know. I feel like I was more mad about it than he was. Like, to him, it was funny, but like a funny inconvenience. But I was like, I was like, dude, you should be mad. Like, these people are giving you shit. You haven't done anything. Like, they're searching your locker and your backpack, and people are calling you names and yelling shit at you. Like, I would be mad. And he was like, well, if I get mad, like, what good does it do me? And if I, you know, if I get mad at one of these guys that calls me a name, like, that's just gonna make things worse. And I was like, yeah, you're right. But like, given all the violence and everything in this movie, I was like, this is such a weird movie to watch, like, at this time for me. Like, I'm leaving high school, and you got all this, you know, school shootings, and unfortunately, it's still a big problem. But I was talking to Mike off air the other night, and he was asking me, like, what you and I were going to do. And I was like, oh, we're doing Heathers. And he was like, oh, yeah, I don't think I ever watched that. And, you know, I think I'm just going to skip that episode. And I was like, that's fine. You know, you're always welcome. But I was like, you know, I think this is a movie, like, if you don't see it at a certain age in your life, like, it's not going to hit you the same. Like, you know, Mike is, you know, late 30s. I don't want to expose Mike's age when he's not here to, like, defend himself. But, like, Mike is in his late 30s. I feel like this movie wouldn't hit him the same like it hit me when I was, like, about to graduate high school. Like, I don't know what age you were when you watched it, and you can kind of speak to that in a minute. But I was like, I don't think this is a Mike movie, right? Like, there's a lot of stuff in here, and I think about Mike, and I'm like, I don't think Mike would really go for this.
Every line is my favorite line. Swatch dogs and Diet Coke heads. I mean, I know the movie by heart. I had actually just gone through something where a girl had committed suicide who was, you know, called everything from a freak, a witch, just a girl who dressed differently and who was kind of goth, and she committed suicide in my school, and then as soon as she committed suicide, everybody was talking about how great she was and saying that they were friends, and her funeral was huge, and it was like, and then I got the script, and you know, it just really struck me because I was so disgusted with the behavior of my school. It's one of the very, very few movies that teenagers
can watch and be blown away by and not be completely insulted.
A lot of people, some very creepy, some great, think that movie saved them in high school, and I stand for all the losers and the nerds.
What kids do to each other in high school is as bad as what adults do to each other in war and divorce. Your high school scars are way deeper than your divorce scars or your Vietnam scars. There are a lot of really smart kids out there who don't want to be insulted by John Hughes. Not that I don't like The Breakfast Club or anything like that. It's a brilliant piece of literature. And I mean, I call it literature because it really is. I held it up next to Catcher in the Rye and all the great books that I've read. I think originally they had another actress in mind. I got Dan Waters and Michael Lehman's phone numbers and I literally started stalking them. I think a lot of actors were really scared of the material. I remember a specific incident that will stay with me forever, where my agent at the time, who I left shortly after this happened, got down on her hands and knees and begged me not to do Heathers. She said that it would ruin my career and I would never work again. A lot of guys came in and read for the part, and I remember the scene that they read was a scene where I'm fake hanging and they come in and they do the whole monologue to me. So for like 2 weeks, I had to stand on this chair and like pretend I'm hanging, and the actors would do the speech. Some of them were just so like, just didn't get the comedy of it. We're really just being very dramatic about it. And Christian just came in, he was so perfect. I couldn't wait to get to work in the morning. I never wanted the day to end. We were left completely alone, as far as I know, by the studio, because it was like no money. And I don't think anyone ever thought this movie was, no, anyone was gonna see this movie. So it wasn't like the studio was there every day going, you know, hurry up. I can't even discuss cow tipping, because to tip cow, it's insane. The prop guys were below camera and they had to throw the mud at us to not laugh. I remember turning the corner of my mouth down. I mean, I was, if you watch the scene closely, I am like going. My favorite is, well, not my favorite, but I have so many favorite moments, is when I'm walking up the hill and I'm wiping the mud off and I see JD standing there, and you see Heather McNamara being date raped in the field. Like, it's so subversive and sick. Her journal entries are so hilarious and sad and tragic and funny and brilliant. I sometimes wondered, what if they got cut out after we did the movie? And I was so glad they didn't, because they really showed the turmoil that she was going through. The original ending was, the bomb was strapped to me, and I give this amazing speech on the steps of the school, and the camera moves in on my face, and then it cuts to black, and you hear my voice go boom. But I do love the ending as it is. I love that he lights my cigarette with his exploding his body. I remember dancing, I remember crying, I remember being really happy and really sad. There was so many people who were like, why is it called Heathers? I'm like, how can you ask that question? It's such a great title. Lethal Attraction. And I think it was actually released as that in Europe. I don't know how Satan or devil worshippers got into this mix, but that's what we were called for a long time. I was gonna do a movie after Heathers, and I got fired because the director saw Heathers and said he didn't want to work with anyone associated with the movie. I don't think of it as a movie that I was in a lot. I just think of it as a great film, and if I wasn't in it, it would still be my favorite film. I get asked about that more than anything else. I don't know who'd be up for it. I certainly would be. I have to go call Dan right now.
I mean, I guess, is that Is that like the Saved by the Bell defense clause that I have, Justin? Like, that's what I'm trying to, like, because I don't know. It seemed like to me, and this is maybe just me playing devil's advocate or whatever, but it seemed like to me the way, you know, because I did listen to the audio commentary and you were asking me about that, and it has the writer, the director, and the producer of the film on the audio commentary. And they kind of talked about how they really wanted, well, not them, but that new world, right, that was going out of business or whatever. But when they were making this movie and how they didn't get very much marketing because nobody knew how to market it, because I think the conception was from the marketing side, it's like, well, how do we sell this black comedy about teenage suicide? Because what's the market for that? Like, there is none. But they also sort of kind of were resting on their laurels, right? Because they're like, oh, but this was a good movie and it played in all the good art house theaters. Like, basically, they're listing off all the big cities, you know, Los Angeles, Chicago, you know, like, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, you know, New York, whatever. Like, that's where this had its run in the theaters. And the people that were watching it that clued into it, whether I guess it was test audiences or real audiences or whatever, they seem to be saying it wasn't something that took off with quote unquote kids. It was something that took off with people that had experienced high school. So the people that were actually responding to the black humor more were people in their, you know, 20s and 30s, or, you know, maybe 30s and 40s and 50s or whatever. At least that's, you know, based on their verbal accounts of it. So I guess I can't squash what you're saying, because I had to think about this because I didn't have an immediate recollection. You know, this was not, like, as I've already said, this was not something I saw in the theater. Like, I did not watch this in a movie theater. This wasn't anything my parents had any interest in seeing, obviously, right? Because otherwise I might have seen it. You know what I mean? Or I don't even know if this was something my parents even was on their radar, really, right? And my two memories of this were, I know when I first watched this, it was probably like on TV and it was probably heavily edited.
At Westerberg High, the students are dying to be popular.
No one at Westerberg's gonna let you play their reindeer game.
Westerberg, where peer pressure has a first name. It's Heather.
Are you a Heather?
No. I'm a Veronica.
Christian Slater, Shannon Daugherty, and Winona Ryder.
And I think there was a time when I actually thought you were cool.
Watch Heathers, a Comedy Central special movie presentation. Saturday, December 12th at 9, only at Comedy Central.
Or at least, you know, the language was clean. You know what I mean? It was like, you know, holy cheese, Doc, cheese Louise, Doc, you know, that kind of, you know, stuff. Like, even when I saw the one of the trailers for this on the Blu-ray, you know, it's funny because I think the original or one of the versions of the trailer says, you know, God, you're such a bitch. But, like, I think in the other one of the other trailers, it's like tone. It's like, God, you're such a barfmoggin, or, you know, like they say something else. You know what I mean? Like where it's like slightly cleaned up for language. Right.
Why are you such a mega brat? Why are you such a mega bitch?
Because I can be. Veronica, why are you pulling my dick? Do you really think if Betty Finn's fairy godmother made her cool, she would still hang out with her dweebet friends? No way, Veronica.
I do have a distinct memory of the first time I watched this. It was probably just some, you know, syndicated afternoon movie type thing. And it was when I was probably, I'm going to say, a freshman in high school. And the reason why I know that is because I think I watched this movie because of a girl. Shocker of shocks.
Christian Slater is so hot in this movie. It is absurd.
I didn't know if it was just me. I'm like, oh.
No.
But I think, and this might speak to something like Tony's talked about before, because I can't remember what movie it was. Maybe it was They Live or something like that, where everybody was quoting it and you felt like an outcast because you didn't know what the fuck they were quoting and what they were talking about.
Our love is God. Let's go get a slushie.
This girl that I was really into because, not only did I think she was pretty, but like, you know, the exact moment I fell for this girl was when we were in English class, and it was like, you know how in English class occasionally, like, the class has to read a play in a textbook, and sometimes they say, oh, come on, everybody, get together, and we're going to have you read out the play instead of just, you know, read it in your corner by yourself or whatever. And me being the drama kid that I was, like, I ate that stuff up, and I took it seriously and tried to actually, you know, do a really, really good cold read, you know, like I usually would on this show for, you know, Mike's synopses about Netflix Transformers garbage or whatever, you know, I'd have fun with it and actually, you know, try to do whatever it is justice. And I don't remember if it was like the teleplay of like one of the Rod Serling Twilight Zones or it was something that we were reading in class, or maybe it was like a play version of Dickens or something like that, or whatever it was. But it was like, and they were like, go ahead and read a passage from that. And when she read it, it was like, oh shit, she's a drama kid too. Do you know what I mean? And like, it was really good, you know? And I was just like, and then that was the moment where I was like, or whatever. And I'm pretty sure she dug this movie, and that's why I made it a point to watch it, because I didn't know what she was quoting, and you know, she was probably into Christian Slater or whatever, like that whole thing. And so I just wanted to know, like, what could I, you know, it was like, that was always my angle. I was like, what can I get out of this? You know, like to, but you know, in the longer run of it all, like, I liked this movie, like, and I thought it was funny, and I still kind of think it's funny. Like, I mean, I guess, you know, Justin already brought it up really early on, but I mean, I guess you can't help but think about Columbine and everything after that to come, right, when you watch this now. But, and it's interesting that it sounds like, Justin, you watch this when that was fairly fresh, maybe. And like, I guess my context is, I watched this back when, you know, the producer, the writer, and the director will have said to you, you know, Columbine was barely a glint in anyone's eye. Do you know what I mean? Like they were just like, you know what it reminds me of? Because I was telling Justin, I watched so much. I was watching all these RoboCop retrospective videos or whatever. It reminds me of like all the shit in those where you know, it's that satiric kind of, you know, black comedy where you're watching these ads and it's like, oh, you need to get the, you know, the 600 SUX because, you know, cars suck and, you know, like whatever, you know, like this kind of biting commentary. But at the time it was funny because it was just a joke.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't the reality of the situation. And the reason why I laugh at these movies now even harder than I did back then is because now I feel like I'm the goddamn comedian in Watchmen, because I'm also crying inside, but I'm also laughing because it's still fucking funny to me, because now it's not a joke anymore. Do you know what I mean? Like, and so that's one of those things that like cracked me up. But I, you know, I watched this, like I said, like way before any of that happened. And of course, you know, that I think, you know, there was that, you know, I think also I was, you know, because she liked Christian Slater, I was like, well, what can I do to be like Christian Slater or whatever, or make myself like Christian Slater or something, you know, so there was that aspect of kind of like idolization or whatever, you know, like mimicry or something like that, you know, like what was cool about him that I could make cool about myself and all that kind of stuff. They say he's a psychopath, but they also go to great lengths to say, because the character comes off as charming and whatnot, that there's never a moment where I guess it gets to some point in the film where there's no going back or whatever, but like that, I think there's that aspect where people go along for the ride or whatever. And so a lot of that stuff, like our love is God, let's go get a slushy, like that's the kind of stuff she was quoting. And I was like, what the fuck is that for? You know, like, I don't know what this is. And so I think I just watched it like on some syndicated channel one night or whatever. And I think it became part of that, you know, when I had my a burgeoning VHS collection of movies that I would, you know, want to have at the ready, like, oh, I rent this so much, I might as well buy it type thing. And then, you know, it probably became a, you know, I don't know if I say I watched all the time, but I felt like I was going to watch it enough that rather than pay $2.99 to rent it every single time, I might as well just buy it, you know, type thing.
Beetle breakfast? Beetle drink? Beetle juice?
That's it!
Name's Beetlejuice?
That role was just sort of like a cartoon. You know, I didn't, you know, it was more fun than anything else.
I'm a no-rest build-up man myself.
Be a dick. Stuff'll kill her.
Say we go with Big Blue here.
Talking about, she would never drink anything that looked like that anyway.
So we'll put it in this. You won't be able to see what she's drinking.
It's a very perceptive look at high school life. It's of course very exaggerated, and it's a satire. It's a parody, but at the same time, it's completely sort of on the button, because it does, you know, we are addressing certain issues in very comic ways that sort of make you laugh, but at the same time make you think.
Grow up, Heather.
What is your damage, Heather?
Don't blame me. Blame Heather.
Now, is this Heather the cheerleader?
Meet the Heathers. They're beautiful.
Why are you such a mega bitch?
Because I can be.
And they're popular.
I'm worshipped, and I'm only a junior.
But at Westerberg High...
You a Heather?
No, I'm a Veronica.
Being too popular can be murder.
Who's that guy in the coat think he is, anyway?
Who Diddley?
His name is Jason Dean.
How very.
I don't really like my friends.
I don't really like your friends either.
JD is a man with a plan.
This is perfecto.
And she...
I'll ask you to do me a favor.
...just became part of it.
I just killed my best friend.
And your worst enemy.
You're not a rebel. You're fucking psychotic.
You say tomato, I say tomato.
Dear Diary,
it's God versus my boyfriend, and God's losing.
He's feeling a little superior tonight.
Let's kick his ass.
The peer pressure cooker is about to explode.
That's it. We're breaking up.
Now!
Young love.
Heathers. Starring Winona Ryder from Beetlejuice and Christian Slater from The Name of the Rose and Tucker.
Prepare to die.
Heathers.
I didn't know anything about this movie either. Like, I got it at the library, and I had seen it in the little, like, rental space, and I kept, you know, passing it up. I'm like, finally one day I was like, well, what is this? Like, it's got Winona Ryder, and I picked it up and looked at it, and I was like, I think I thought it was going to be like The Breakfast Club or something, like some kind of like
80s movie. Yeah,
like a coming of age 80s comedy, John Hughes, like that sort of thing. So like, I'm watching this for the first time, and Heather number one starts choking and dies, falls to the glass coffee table. And I'm like, ah, she's not really dead. And then it kept going, and I was like, oh, holy shit, they killed her.
Oh, fuck, she is dead.
Yeah, and then they go to, like, the two guys, like, setting them up and everything. And I was like, okay. And I was like, where are you going, movie? I'm like, you've taken me by the hand. You know, I've rented you. I'm going on this journey with you. And you're taking me to some dark places. And I was like, oh, those bullets that he say are, like, knockout bullets or something? I'm like, they're not knockout bullets. That dude's fucking dead. And then, like... And then what really got me was, like, when she shot the other dude, I'm like, holy shit, like, she killed him. Like Heather, the death of Heather number one, like, you could say she was, like, complicit or an accomplice. Like, she didn't, you know, she didn't murder her, right? Like, it was all JD.
Do you, like, because people do argue about that.
I'm
like,
sure they do.
Like, but that's your stance on it, she just made a mistake and took the wrong cup.
Yeah, to me, that, like, that's all him, and it was a mistake. But, like, when she knew that the bullets were not knockout bullets or whatever, and she still pulled the trigger. I'm like, holy shit, like, where is this going? Like, because, like, she's the main character in this movie, and she's killed this dude. I'm like, is this going to turn into, like, some kind of, like, teen courtroom drama thing or what? Like, no, it just keeps going, man. And, like, the thing that always makes me laugh, and it probably shouldn't, you know, because, you know, different time and all that stuff, but, like, I'm sorry, it always makes me laugh. When the two dudes are in their casket at the funeral and they've got their football helmets on and the dude is talking about his gay son, I'm like, I'm sorry, that makes me laugh every fucking time. And no, they're holding the football. and then when they're laughing about it, and his sister, I assume it's his sister, she turns around and she's crying and she gives him, like, this, like, what the fuck look. It's like, you feel bad, and then Winona feels bad, and you feel even worse. It's like a double punch. You're just like, oh shit, oh man, like, she knows. And then it just kind of keeps spiraling out of control. And I was just captivated by the first time I watched it, because I didn't know what I was getting in for. And I was like, where are you going, movie? And I'm like, at the end of it, I'm like, I think they're really gonna blow up the school. Like, this movie's went to some dark places. It did some dark shit. Like, I don't know if anybody's going to make it out of this movie alive. Like, maybe the parents, and that's what they're going to try and say. Like, I kind of imagine, like, the school would blow up, all your characters die, and then, like, the parents would stand around and they would say, like, oh, we're really to blame and we should have been there and all this stuff, and the movie would end. That's kind of what I was expecting.
Do you know about the original written ending as it stands?
No, what's this?
I mean, essentially, it's kind of what you were talking about. They talk about multiple different endings, like, where, you know, some of it was based on budget, right? Because this did not have a big budget or anything like that. But one of the proposed endings was, instead of it being Christian Slater that comes out with the bomb strapped to him, that Veronica, Winona Ryder, does kill JD in the boiler room, and then she comes outside with the bomb strapped to her, and that she blows herself up. That was viewed as, like, she's the main character. It didn't play well. Like, nobody really, it sounds like a lot of people pushed for that not to happen.
Yeah,
and
like, so what would that even be saying? Like, what?
Yeah,
as a character, like, what is she saying?
So that quickly got nixed. I forget what the variance of the second one was, but I think the original as written was that the entire school does blow up. And then when it blows up, then it cuts to this kind of satirical prom in heaven, so that everyone who has died, including the main characters, are there. And the punch bowl is full of the blue Clorox or whatever, blue, you know, dishwater, whatever, the Drano that they fed her or whatever. And it's supposed to be this, like, you know, again, black kind of joke of a situation where it's like the only place that all these, you know, jocks and nerds and popular girls and whatever could get along was once they're all dead in heaven or something. I don't know. Like, that's
a line JD says, but I don't like that ending either. Like, this in heaven thing, like, that seems like too much. I don't know.
Yeah. No. So, I mean, obviously they didn't go with either of those. And then that was what the second one was. The second one was, everything happens like it does. She shoots JD. JD comes out and blows himself up. She lights the cigarette and she walks back in and she sees Martha dump truck and she's like, you know, hey, why don't we, you know, hang out or whatever. And instead of Martha dump truck saying, oh, I'd like that very much, and they walk off together all sort of happy, like, because she's the new sheriff in town, she pulls out a gun, shoots her in the mouth, and says, fuck you, Heather.
What?
And then as she's lying there choking to death on the bullet, she's like, my name's not Heather. My name's not Heather. My name's not Heather. And that's how they would have wanted it to end.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so there were a bunch of, like, really, really twisted, like dark kind of endings that they had in mind that they didn't go with any of those, because I think that was more a studio thing of like it's like they went along for most of the ride, but I think in the final analysis they wanted, I guess they wanted Winona Ryder's character to
make up for the note at the beginning, because that's the way I see that ending. It's like she wrote the note even though she was like bullied into it, she still did it, and it humiliated, you know, dump truck girl, whatever. And then it's like they're doing all these suicides. They're not suicides, but she actually tries to kill herself because she's miserable and everyone's picking on her, laughing at her. And you feel sorry for that character. So I'm like, I like the ending as is. It's like she's trying to make up for some of that misery she caused.
Yeah. I mean, I guess at this point it's weird. I was gonna go into different points, but you're making me think about things where it's like, well, is that good enough though? Like in other words, know. Like does that, like you just said, like, okay, you don't, like in your interpretation of events, you don't blame her for the first one because she didn't know. So at worst case, what would that be, like fucking unknown manslaughter or whatever the fuck, you know what I mean? Like the first one is not murder, right? If we're being judge, jury, and executioner here, right? Like, but the one where she knows that the Ichluga bullets are not I lie bullets are real, right? And then she pulls the trigger, right? That is you know, she is cognizant of what she's doing at that point, right? So then you're kind of like, okay, does her like reaching out to Martha Dump Truck make up for killing the one dude's dead gay son who's not really gay or whatever? Like,
it doesn't. I mean, in reality, it wouldn't. But like in a movie, she's trying to make amends, but it still doesn't absolve her. She still has blood on her hands for that one thing.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, it's like, it's one of those things where you kind of wish you knew a little bit after the movie ends. It's like sometimes you watch a movie and you're like, okay, I don't need to see a sequel or prequel or anything else from that universe. I'm good with this. It's perfect. And then sometimes you watch a movie and you're like, I wish I could go like a year or two after the end and find out like what happened, like where some of these characters went. It's like, would Winona Ryder's characters start to feel bad in, would she turn herself in, or was she like, I mean, what is she? She has a conscience, clearly, but what can she do to try and absolve the murder other than turning herself in? Like, I don't think she can really do anything other than turn herself in, right?
And I think as far as, I mean, I think Winona Ryder was, I don't know if desperate's the right word, but it sounds like she was chomping at the bit for the writer to write a sequel. And at some point, I mean, I don't think he ever will or wants to do it, but at one point he told her, because they were talking about it in one of these extra featurettes or whatever that you know, they were interviewing, because I think it was like the 20th anniversary set or something, you know, of the movie, and so they were interviewing them or whatever for the 20th anniversary of it, right? And he said something along the lines of, there would be a sequel, but she would now be a senator in Washington, and there would be a bunch of other senators named Heather, and one of them would be Meryl Streep. And he was like, yeah, and it ends with her like killing the president, but it's a good thing. And it was like, and he's like, but he's like, I'm never going to write that. And don't tell Winona, because like, she's going to like, it's going to ruin our friendship or whatever. You know, I don't know. I mean, he was probably half joking and half telling the truth, you know, or whatever. But like, it just sounds like one of these things where you're just like, oh, that sounds fucking horrible. Like, you know, and you know what else is weird is I really, really do genuinely like this movie. I think it's funny and witty, and like the things I was going to take us down sort of before we got on that other track with I guess, I don't know, responsibility, right? Was like, to me, like you were talking about how, you know, my dead gay son, you know, like that's one of those lines that like you're always going to laugh at or whatever. like I, you know what else I love is I love fucking Otho in this, like as the priest or whatever.
Yeah.
And I love like my favorite part that just kept making me chortle was when he's like, there is a righteous dude, and his name is fucking Jesus. You know, like, yeah. And I was just, the kids on their MTV video games.
Yeah, that like, you know? Your MTV video games.
And I fucking love it. It's like, yeah. It fucking cracks my ass up too much, because I think it's fucking funny.
The other thing from him that makes me laugh is the dream sequence where he's like, Eskimo is the key to all of this. I was like...
Our little Eskimo, you know, and all that shit. It's just fucking funny, dude.
You know, I feel like if we're going to get canceled for anything, it might be this episode. Because this is one of those, I mean, I feel like we say it often, but like, I feel like this is definitely one of those movies because of its content and its jokes you couldn't make in this day and age. Or if you did, it would be so sanitized, it would be unrecognizable.
Well, I feel like I get taken to task by saying that's all horseshit, right? Like that apparently you could make this movie today, even though the filmmakers say in their interstitials that they couldn't, or they would have to be a lot more braver than they were back then to make the film the same way they did. And they don't know if they would get away with it, right? They don't know that they could have done the bomb sequence or any of that stuff. And certainly not as a comedy, right? Like that. So I kind of reject that because, you know, I don't know. Like for me, like, I mean, it's funny, right? Because this to me is like one of those things where, again, I sort of stand by what I said. I do feel like the comedian in Watchmen when it comes to shit like this, because it's funny as fuck to me. But it's also kind of tragically sad that it's that funny, because it's like that thing where, to me, it's got that. The reason, like, this is me. Like, the reason why the comedian is laughing at all that shit is because he understands the multiple visions or the trans time dimensional aspect of Dr. Manhattan, you know, because it's like that one moment of clarity where you sit there and you're laughing because you realize, wait, this was a joke like 35 years ago, and now it's 35 years later and it's not a fucking joke. But that's why it's fucking hilarious, because you are the fucking joke. Like now you're the joke, because you thought it could never fucking happen, and it did fucking happen, and that's why you're the joke now. You know what I mean? And that's why he's laughing, and that's anyway. But so it's like one of those things where you're like sitting there going like, holy fuck! Like, I mean, I agree with you. I mean, this. You know, maybe this is a cliche. Maybe we say this all the time and people want to rebel against it and go, oh, that's bullshit. They'd make anything they wanted to today. But I agree with you. I don't think anybody would have the balls to make this shit. Or at least if they did, like it'd be like a David Chappelle HBO show, and everybody would be up in arms about it and want to get everybody involved canceled or whatever, right? They'd be like, how dare you make fun of all these tragedies, and how dare you whatever, because they actually have like real context for this shit. Whereas when this fucking thing came out, like, yes, there were teen suicides, but it was more like Wes Craven coming up with the idea for Nightmare on Elm Street, where he's like, oh yeah, I read this story about this guy and, you know, Tim Buck fucking too, and he was so scared of his going back to sleep and he clawed himself up and whatever, and that got me thinking, and then I made Freddy Krueger. You know what I mean? And the inspiration for that is so fucking far removed from what he made. It's not even, but it's almost like now the guy from Timbuktu, like, it's the actual Timbuktu movie, you know, and you're actually making it. And then people go, oh my God, like, how could you do that? Like that, you know, how can you take advantage of that guy's pain and suffering to make a 2-hour piece of enjoyment for people to watch or whatever, you know? And so you're like sitting there going, and I guess, I mean, I don't know. Like, I used to get really irate over shit, because I remember when, you know, you were talking about when you watched this movie, you were getting out of high school and it was just sort of the Columbine thing was fresh. And when that thing was fresh, I remember getting dragged, because, you know, there was the period of time where from 95 to 99, we went and saw every movie on Friday. And then after that, I was trying to be a working actor and this and that and the other thing. And I would watch things, but I also started getting a little more particular about what I would watch. There were certain things when I was early on in shaping my worldview of things, there were things where I thought I should be watching something and I would just get disgusted by it or pissed off by it or whatever and decide to stop watching it. Or there might be things where I never would have considered watching it in a million years, but because I was open to, you know, whatever it was, foreign films or whatever, there were things I'd watch and I'd say, oh my God, this is a masterpiece. I never would have seen it before. So it could work both ways. But my point with that is, I didn't just watch everything blindly, but also there were instances where, you know, if it was somebody who was a friend of mine and they said, oh, come watch this with me, I'd be like, for the social aspect, for, you know, even if I wasn't, you know, even if I didn't want to go watch Congo five times, I watched Congo five times because my high school buddies wanted to fucking watch Amy Good Gorilla or whatever, you know, and you're just like, all right, fine, we'll go watch this piece of shit movie like for the second time because, you know, you're going out with your buddies or there's girls involved or whatever it is, right? And so one of my good buddies at the time was like, oh, I want to see this fucking Michael Moore documentary. And I go, okay, fine. And I mean, he loved me watching that because I think he knew it was going to fucking piss me off. And like, I guess we got a lot of mileage out of going to watch that because forever after that, like he knew that somebody ambushing Charlton Heston in his own fucking house, you know, would push my buttons at the time or whatever. But that was also directly coming off of all the Columbine bullshit. And I, you know, it's one thing to say that, like, a piece of fiction that was made 35 years ago, that was made, 12 years before that happened, like, somehow caused something. But it's another thing for somebody to make a piece of, quote-unquote, entertainment that is this, I don't know, shock jock documentary thing that's clearly at the expense of people's misery. You know what I mean? Like, anyway, that whole thing, you know, rubbed me the wrong way. I think that guy's a fucking asshole, you know? Like, so it's like, and I think also, like, so many, I don't know, stupid fucking things that were said, you know, like, and maybe even well-intentioned things, you know, but just as unconscious of, you know, like everybody's got their own, I don't know, everybody's got to throw in their own fucking two cents about like tragedies and somehow make it about them. And it's not about them, you know, like it's about the people that it actually fucking affected, you know? So it's like, I don't know, like, you know, and I think it was weird because I think on some of this, like, cause it was 20 years later, on the special features or whatever. So it would have been what?
2009?
That sounds about right. And I think the director was saying how when Columbine happened, there were newspapers or news organizations that called him up to interview him to get his take on that. And he was like, why do you want to talk to me about that? And it was like one of those things where it's like, oh, they want to talk to him about it because he made this movie. Do you know what I mean? And it's like, well, what do you, you know, how are you going to try to spin this? Like, what are you trying to say exactly? You know what I mean? Like, it's like all this, you know, weird stuff where you're like, is this, you know, it's funny because the satirical part of this is, you know, that's why you laugh at the Otho shit, because it's like the MTV video games. It's like they're gonna lambast something. Accuse something and not even know what the fuck it is. You know what I mean? Like, so I don't know. Like, and it kind of gets away from, like, I don't know, for me, like the purity of what I felt when I watched this, which is back when it was just a joke. Purity, I guess. I don't know how to explain that anymore. Yeah. The back when it was like, and it's funny too, because it's like, are you supposed to, it's funny because it seems like it's a lot easier for people, the creators and or people watching, to kind of like, oh, look, she calls Christian Slater a psychopath. Like, so clearly he's a bad guy, and he gets worse and worse and worse as the movie progresses. But he's also
so hot in this movie. It is absurd.
By design, the cool kid, like, or the cool mysterious kid. If he's not James Dean, because his name is JD, he's, you know, going for that cool James Dean archetype, right? And then in this era, that would have been, you know, I don't know, the Luke Perry, you know, of 90210, or, you know, whatever kind of comparison you would want to make. And like, I don't know, there's something about that where it's like, I can't disassociate that. Like Christian Slater is still cool in this movie, no matter how many times you call him a psychopath or whatever. And I guess this kind of goes back to, you know, maybe the stuff that you were saying could get us canceled or whatever, that I might edit all this stuff out. But it's one of those things where there's that part of me that's like, if people were Heathers and like these two jocks or whatever, like if they were like these cruel people in high school, you know, it's like, do they deserve to drink Drano and die? Do they deserve to get shot to death? I don't know, but I can understand like the you know, I could understand why that might be viewed as cathartic to see that happen in a black comedy for people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like that it's not, you know, the idea that like the constantly cutting back to the teacher board, a bunch of incompetence, you know, like and the parents that are clueless. It's like everyone in this is like Carrie Kelly's parents in The Dark Knight Returns. You know, it's like, oh, remember when we used to protest? Oh, yeah. Where's our daughter? Whoa, hand me the joint, you know, and all this fucking horse shit. It's like I love that fucking teacher where they're like, oh, fuck you, hippie. You know, like what do you, you know, let's talk about our feelings and all this other shit. And it's just like, I don't know, like that. That's the thing about it. It's funny because it was just a joke, but now it's not just a joke because like a lot of that shit is like real, you know, like, but it's also just as tragic and funny at the same time. So I don't know. Well, anyway,
when the three of us were kids, we would say something to like maybe a bully in school, like if you hit me, if you do this again, if you push me again, I'm going to kill you. And it wasn't taken seriously, but back to my like Columbine thing, like I can remember being in high school, I was in art class, and I forget exactly what I was saying. I was talking about somebody was irritating me or doing something, I can't remember, but the thing I said was, basically I was like, well, if they do that again, they're going to get shot, and you know, it's like, I'm in art class, everyone's talking and laughing, everything went silent, and I suddenly like looked up, and I looked around because I was drawing, I looked around, and I was like, oh, I shouldn't have. And I was like, I got a cover for this. And I was like, shoot him with squirt guns because it's a joke and laugh. And then the art teacher gets up from behind her desk and she's kind of looking at me. And I was like, I don't know. I felt like Willow and Buffy, whenever Willow was like trying to like hurriedly explain something and cover her ass, you know, I'm like, because I would never shoot anyone because that's bad, and I would shoot him with a squirt gun because it would be a joke and he would be embarrassed and we'd all laugh and haha, and I was like, oh shit, I'm gonna get sent to like the principal's office, I'm gonna be going into counseling for like the next 12 years or something, they're gonna put me away for saying something like that I've said, you know, since I was a little kid, like just joking, like I'm going to kill you if you don't leave me alone or something like that. And I was like, oh shit, I got to watch what I'm saying from now on. Like this is, oh yeah, shit's getting serious.
Well, it's like what they talk about, I think, in the commentary is like how, you know, the initial meeting between JD and the two jock guys, right? And they come up and they want to like kick his ass, and then he pulls the gun on them. And then it, you know, it makes you think, oh, he shot them both dead. But then it's like, haha, it was just blanks. They shit themselves in front of the school, and JD's the cool guy and whatever. And when they cut to the Heathers, it's like, oh, they're not going to send them to jail. He's just going to, you know, he'll probably just be suspended for a couple days or whatever, you know. And it's like, it's exactly like what you're saying, depending on the time frame of this thing, that's either true or it's just a flat out lie, right? Like, and you know what else was weird was, and I know nothing about this, and I don't know that I want to know anything about this, but apparently in 2018, there was a Heather's TV show on Paramount.
What?
Yeah. And I don't know that I want to know anything about it, but like, I'm just like, I don't know. You know, again, I guess that would put the lie to anything that we're saying, though. Do you know what I mean? I don't know. I mean, it's like, how do they tweak it to fit? I have no idea. And then the other thing too that shocked me was when I was looking for a little thing for my avatar, a little picture. Apparently, they made a musical out of this too. And I don't know how recent and or non-recent that is, but I mean, they certainly tried to, I don't know, make it an acceptable brand, I guess, because, you know, I guess ideas in Hollywood are dead and they don't have anything else.
Here's what's fun about it is that in the Heather's TV show, remember we heard the rumblings of a reboot and they made an entire season of TV of the Heather's reboot. That was the ending that they were having at the end of their season one. But you know what? Not a lot of people knew that because the show itself, it was going to be coming out on Paramount Network. It kept getting postponed because there were real life school shootings and it wasn't coming out at an appropriate time at all. So it kept getting postponed and then it was quietly released and then no one talked about it.
The other thing I was going to mention was, even though this I do like this film and I like the writing in it and everything, the screenwriter went on to write some of the biggest fucking flops like that I can think of. Like he was involved in The Adventures of Ford Fairlane for the screenplay. He was involved in writing the screenplay for Hudson Hawk. Uh-huh. Apparently, he had something to do with the screenplay for Batman Returns, which is not a flop by any means, but I don't know that I consider it like, you know, the end-all be-all of Batman movies. He wrote the screenplay for Demolition Man.
Waterworld or something?
No, but yeah. I mean, most of the recent stuff, I've never seen it, like, to be honest, including, I guess, he gets some kind of credit for that Heather's TV series, probably because, you know, he wrote the original screenplay for the movie, right? But yeah, so there's that. I was also curious about the director, which he directed Hudson Hawk as well, or I guess, you know, the guy wrote, I mean, the same guy who wrote Heather's wrote Hudson Hawk, and the same guy who directed Heather's directed Hudson Hawk, and I thought to myself, well, he must have not done anything after that. But honestly, the director had a much longer and, I don't know, fruitful career than the writer, according to IMDb, because the writer, Daniel Waters, like, I mean, he's got, you know, I don't know, 15 or 16, 14 credits as a writer or whatever it is, and the director has, like, 54 credits, and he's still directing, like, TV show episodes today. Right. Like, so, I mean, he's currently working, as far as I could tell, you know, on a bunch of shows that people, you know, would have heard of and or seen, you know, Heels, American Rust, The Terror, Snowfall, Veronica Mars, Jessica Jones, House of Lies, True Blood, American Horror Story, Dexter. You know what I mean? Nurse Jackie, like all this stuff that you've heard of, right? Like, you know, even if you haven't seen it, like you've at least heard of it, right? And even after Hudson Hawk, I thought, oh, maybe his career, like he took a break for a little while. And it's like, oh, yeah, maybe 1 or 2 years. But then afterwards, it was like he did a few more movies that didn't really amount to much, like Airheads, Truth About Cats and Dogs, like a lot of stuff that wasn't like very well received. But then it seems like he just started directing a lot of TV, you know, and made his career there. But I don't know.
Sounds like his career went the same trajectory as your favorite director, Rachel Talalay. From film to TV.
Yeah. I mean, and then there's that argument now that TV is, I mean, they always seem to say it. Like, and I always kind of yammer on about this, that there used to be this big, you know, I mean, talk about clicks and stuff. Like film was Heather's. You know, TV was not Heather's. TV was fucking, you know, the Geek Squad, or you know what I mean? Or maybe the Geek Squad was like Saturday morning TV or something. You know what I mean? Like there were hierarchies where it was, like I said, it wasn't, you didn't cross over into it. And if you did, that meant you, you know, you lost status as part of the cool clique in Hollywood or whatever. You know what I mean? Like that whole thing. But I think now, like, the lines are a little bit more blurred because a lot of stuff that's done on TV is very film, you know, film-esque and you know, better than it's been as far as like production values and all that kind of stuff. So.
You look like hell.
Yeah, I just got back.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's all we do is cult movies. Yeah. Like, you know, it's got a cult.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Lawrence of Arabia, I wouldn't call it a cult movie. But,
is that like is that the person who's weird when they're poor and they're eccentric when they're rich? Is that who we are? Are we the cult?
Other movies we've done are politely referred to as cultish.
As Michael and I will tell you, that Tragedy Plus Time, that we get a lot of compliments for Hudson Hawk now, that, you know, that's a straight...
Which was universally hated when it came out.
Yeah, but we're used to Heather's love, but it's the Hudson Hawk warmth that
is that coming around? Is it coming into its own?
Yeah,
give us
20 years of all our movies. Hey, we got people of every generation that hates the movie.
Did you know that the first Heather was Christian Slater's girlfriend at the time?
No, I did not.
Yeah, yeah. Apparently, they were going out at the time, and I think he, you know, probably introduced her to the people, the casting people or whatever, and was like, hey, audition my girlfriend or whatever. She'll be really good. And it was one of those rare instances where I guess they were like, oh, she is really good. And he's not just saying that because he was going out with her at the time. And then what's weird is I think her and she had some kind of cancer or something. And so she passed away in like 2001 or something. I think, you know, the school paper guy.
Yes.
I think, like, I guess that actor ended up committing suicide for real. So he's also not around anymore. But which is, I don't know. They were commenting on it because it's like in the funeral scene, his character's like, I don't know if I could handle suicide or whatever.
You know? Yeah. That's so weird.
And then it turned out he was, you know, somebody from that group that did commit suicide, I guess.
30 years later, the archetypes of the school groups exist, except on an even more profound level, because there's all even more subdivisions of the jocks and the popular girls and the nerds and the smart people. So there's all these like things coming out that are even more subdivisions that divide people and bring them together at the same time.
I don't think there's anything quite like the mixture of comedy and what have you with that. I find that I'm almost going back to missing movies like Matt Dillon and Tex, where teenagers talk naturalistically. I feel like Heather's almost ruined
right,
a little bit.
Nobody's done a naturalistic
Because even like Dawson's Creek, they're talking like it's dinner at 8 or a Noel Coward thing. And it's, I feel like we're partly to blame for that. And then on the reverse end, that even shows about lawyers now feel about, they're like in high school, like nobody's an adult anymore. So it's like everything feels like Heather's is everywhere. Stop it.
I did not want them dead.
You did too.
I did not.
Did too.
I did not.
Did too.
I did not.
Did too.
Did not.
Did too.
Did not. Did not. Did not. Shut up.
Like I said, this is only the third time I'd watched it, and it started, and I suddenly, you know that conversation we had about Rushmore, where I was like, you know, Rushmore, I thought about it one way as a teenager, and I thought about it differently as an adult. Like, I started watching this, and I'm like, oh, what? It's been so long since I watched this. Like, what if I don't even like this movie anymore? Because I started thinking about all the stuff that's in it, and I was like, oh, that might be an awkward conversation tonight. But no, I still like this movie, so there we go.
Yeah, no, I do like this movie, and it did make me, you know, I had those moments where I was laughing my ass off because I thought it was funny. And I don't know. The other thing, too, it reminded me of was I think I did have like a thing where I would like follow certain people or whatever. Like, it made me think about like, because like Slater, like being in Interview with a Vampire and being in Young Guns 2. And
I was thinking about Star Trek 6.
Yeah, when he showed up in Star Trek 6, you know, like all that stuff. Like that was one of those things where I think I just, you know, I was like sort of keyed in on that. And I think this was part of that, you know, like him playing, you know, and I think Christian Slater even says as much in an interview, and it made me feel a little more less self-conscious about saying something like this. But he's like, oh, you know, I tried to play him like the kind of guy that I would have wanted to be in school, like super cool, even though I don't think I actually pulled it off, you know, like, or whatever, like, and not meaning that he didn't pull it off in the role, but meaning like he wasn't quite that cool himself in school. Do you know what I mean? Like, where it's like, it's like that, I don't know, that Wolverine wish fulfillment thing. It's like, why do nerds like Wolverine? Because they wish they were as cool as Wolverine, not because they are as cool as Wolverine, you know, that type thing. And I think that's the, I don't know, that's the trick, right? It's like you wished. And then, you know, of course, that's a funny thing to say, right? Because it's like, you know, this sort of midway through the movie, it's like, oh, Christian Slater's a psychopath. And it's like, oh, but I wish I was cool as that psychopath. You know what I mean? So it's like, it's a funny ass thing to say.
Yeah, anyway. I mean, this is, if you were like an outsider in high school or you were bullied, like, this is kind of like the ultimate revenge flick. But
yeah,
it's played in a way that, you know, it's normal to be like, oh, this person is bullying me so hard. Like, I wish they would drop dead, or I wish they'd get hit by a truck. I think that's a normal thing to say. It's like you probably don't genuinely want that to happen. You just want the bullying and the harassment to stop. Like you just want it to end. So this is like a revenge thing, but then it goes too far. And much like Winona Ryder watching the girl cry, there's a moment where you're like, oh shit, this is real. Like I shouldn't really wish for someone to drop dead or kill themselves or anything. Like, it's like, if you have, you know, a conscience, and if you're not a psychopath, you feel something and you're like, oh shit, like I should try to be like Winona Ryder at the end of the movie and be friends with the bullied kids or the picked on kids,
right,
and not make their lives worse.
Or even not just even being friends, but if you are in a quote unquote exalted position to you know, it's like that thing, you know, the whole metaphor with the game, right? Like you're it's like, what are you gonna do? Are you gonna knock me out, or are you gonna, you know, just play the game, right? Like, and it's like, you know, and they talk about how that game by design, like you're supposed to be, you know, I guess that game's the metaphor for high school, right? Like if you're in high school and you want to survive high school, it's like there's those moments where you have to be mean and cruel and knock certain people out of the game in order to win the game. But if there's a new sheriff in town at the end of it, like she says, you know, like maybe that's the trick, right? Like that you're actually taking your exalted position and using it for good rather than evil, or whatever, however you want to, you know, phrase it.
You know, when she took like the Heather number one's like hairband, it's like, that's like Magneto putting on his giant M costume. He's going to be the good guy now.
Right. But that would also explain why that one ending you freaked out about could potentially make sense. Because if she's wearing a Heather ribbon, then she could get shot in the face for being a Heather.
Yeah. Like, oh my God, he's a Magneto. He destroyed the sub full of Russians, their comrades. Kill him.
I feel like Heather's is sort of going to open up a whole new can of worms.
It'll be really very. Promise. Okay, just as long as it's not going to be one of those nights where they get shit-faced and take us to a pasture to tip cows.
One, two, three.
That's the best movie I've ever done. And just to have sort of gotten through that whole process of making that movie and to see the response that it's getting now, the reviews and everything, makes me really happy and makes me feel like I really did something that I'm gonna always cherish.
But yeah, this I mean, you know, it's hard to put into words sometimes, but like the satire it has about how people react to death, I think, is still, regardless of how people feel about, you know, present day, modern day, past events that happened, you know, after this film was released, I think the satire of how people react to death is still sort of universal and true, you know, like that whole thing about, you know, that they it's like they all want their 5 minutes of fame on fucking TV to cry about somebody who they barely knew, you know. And I think it sounds like that's what attracted Winona Ryder to the project, where she went through something similar and sort of saw the hypocrisy in that and became really enthusiastic about doing the script, and became, you know, she started campaigning for, you know, oh, I want to do the script, like I'll do it for no money or whatever. And there was like funny shit where they said one of her agents said, you know, begged her not to do the script or whatever. And I don't know if it's funny, because it's like you wonder about stuff like that, because now in hindsight they're like, oh, it's a cult classic, it found its audience on VHS and cable and this and that and the other thing. And even though they were trying to act like it had some kind of audience in theaters, it seemed like it was more of a, I don't know, the way they were talking about it, because I wasn't, you know, I didn't see it in the theater, and I wasn't in LA the time it came out, but it sounds like one of those like lower key art house movies that didn't get a lot of play until it almost by design, it wasn't going to get a lot of play until it went on to VHS or whatever, because it's only in select cities and select venues and all that kind of stuff. And back, I mean, nowadays it's like you can do these Fathom events and stuff and get a little more nationwide with it. But I think, you know, back then it was always like, well, if you were in Chicago or LA or New York or whatever, then yeah, maybe you could see this movie when it came out, you know, if you're lucky, you know. But if you weren't, then, you know, it's like you either had to do some driving or you didn't see the movie at all, you know. So I don't know. I just I find kind of interesting as well, because there was this other moment where I felt like those two stories conflicted, because it was like the one story is Winona Ryder's agent begged her not to do it and she wanted to do it anyway. And then there was this other story that they talked about where like Winona Ryder was up for some other role, but she didn't get the part because the director didn't want to have anything to do with someone who would make a movie like this, quote unquote. Do you know what I mean? Like there were, and I guess that's funny too, because that's maybe an aspect that we haven't really talked about or considered. Like we keep talking about it in terms of like a modern context versus the context when it came out. But the context when it came out, it was still pretty controversial. Do you know what I mean? Like this was not your run-of-the-mill teen comedy. It wasn't your run-of-the-mill movie, per se. Like, you know what it reminded me of was, because they kept talking about how all the actors found the dialogue and the scenes challenging. And it almost reminded me of, like, when Kevin Williamson would get a lot of shit on Dawson's Creek and his screenplays. It's like, oh, his teenagers don't sound like teenagers. They sound like adults. You know what I mean? And I feel like this is almost like a prototype of that, where you know, some of the stuff that they talk about, the language and the I don't know, the concepts and the verbiage they use, you know, it did remind me of you know, kind of Dawson's Creek speak or whatever, you know. See, I could see why that would be semi challenging, because it wasn't just like simple, you know, kind of teen speak dialogue or whatever. And the fact that this was sort of a satirical look at suicide, like sometimes people didn't get the joke and so they took it seriously. So like I think they said like Heather Graham was up for one of the roles as one of the Heathers, and her parents didn't let her do it. And I think some of the quotes said something to the effect of, you know, that they viewed this movie as satanic because, like, in other words, they didn't get the joke, right? They didn't get the movie was anti-suicide. They only saw the surface level of it and kind of just went, oh, this is a movie that's promoting suicide, right? And that's something where even in the current context in which it was made and released, the film was not, I mean, like today it might be controversial for other reasons, for bombs and guns and school shootings and school explosions or whatever, right? But I think even back then, just the notion of suicide, whether those concepts towards the end were, you know, much more fantastical and hair too unheard of at that point, like just the simple fact that there was anything dealing with teenagers committing suicide on film. Like I think there was the concern that it was just the fact that it was a movie about it, like that it was somehow glamorizing it. And I don't think that's the case. I mean, I take things with a grain of salt, but like I take what the creators say at face value, I think, like where they kind of say, oh, hey, this was never about glamorizing suicide. This was always about, you know, pointing out how people react to it. And again, how, you know, I find this with death in general more than just suicide, but how people try to make someone dying more about them and their 5 minutes of fame than actually just focus on the tragedy and or the person themselves, you know.
I feel like if it was trying to glamorize it, like Winona Ryder wouldn't have stopped Heather number two from taking those pills. I mean, she like takes the shit out of her mouth and they just sit down on the bathroom floor and she's like, what are you doing? And they have this really nice conversation about it. I'm like, I guess Heather Graham's parents didn't read that scene. I don't know. Maybe it wasn't in the script or something at that time. I don't know. But
or maybe they didn't even get that far. You know, yeah, like, I don't know. You know, I mean, I think the role she was up for was just the first Heather. So they could have stopped at the point where she died and then decided, oh, this is not cool or whatever. And that also played a role with sponsorship too. When she meets Christian Slater and he buys her a slushie. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, it was probably supposed to be a Slurpee and they were probably supposed to be at 7-Eleven, but 7-Eleven, like, apparently eventually it got to somebody at 7-Eleven that like read the entire script and went, we don't want 7-Eleven associated with this. You know, like, so it's not that they didn't try to do things. They said that, Moby Dick was not in the original script. It was supposed to be Catcher in the Rye, but they didn't want Catcher in the Rye. Like, they wouldn't sign off on that. They didn't want their book to be in this movie, you know? So, I mean, even pre-production, like, there was certain things that got changed and certain things that were too hot to handle or controversial at the time period, much less looking at it through a quote-unquote modern lens, and it all not working. I mean, I think some of this stuff didn't work at the time but was released anyway because it was lower budget, probably because there wasn't that much oversight on it, probably because New World was about to collapse. You know what I mean? Like, so they didn't, you know, at that point it was like, whatever, we don't really care. Like, you know, what you do, and this isn't going to make or break us because we're breaking anyway. You know what I mean? Like, so there were a lot of things that just played into the movie getting released the way it was. But I think, you know, a lot of the initial reception to the movie, you know, I think there were, you know, critics that, you know, it's like one of those things where, you know, you sometimes you watch something or you read something and then you kind of end up making a assessment judgment of the people involved based on the content of the film, you know. And I think that's something that happened too. It's funny though, because I was watching the behind the scenes and hearing the writer talk. There's some things about the writer where he would talk and say, oh, people think this is like me trying to get revenge because I had such a rough time at high school, but I really didn't. I was kind of like the cool writer kid, and I wrote for the school paper, and I kind of had this cachet where people liked me because, you know, I wrote cool stuff or whatever. So that this isn't quite what that is. But at the same time, he did seem to have, like, when he went into the stories about the alternate endings and all that kind of stuff, I mean, he did seem to certainly have a dark streak about him as well. You know what I mean? So it's like, I don't know. Like, there's those things where you sit there and you look at stuff. It kind of reminds me of, like, you know, people reading Alan Moore's work and kind of going, oh, this guy doesn't really think too much of people, does he? Do you know what I mean? And I would willing to be wagered the same thing would be said about the writer of this film, at least in context. And he may say, oh, that's not true, but I mean, that could be something you still get out of it, you know, that, like, you know, the, you know, it's like the note, the suicide note, life sucks. I'm kind of like, to me, it's more like, well, people suck too. You know what I mean? Like if people didn't suck, then people wouldn't want to either commit suicide or kill other people, right? If people didn't suck, you know, like it's like one of those lines that cracks me up in the beginning where he's like, what do they say? The two jocks are like, oh, this cafeteria has a no fags policy. And then he comes back with, well, they certainly seem to have an open door policy for assholes, you know, like, and you're just like, you know, it's funny because it's true, right? Like, you're like, oh, there's plenty. It's like there's plenty of assholes to go around, you know.
I think people would like Alan Moore more if they actually sit down and read Watchmen Babies.
Yes, yes. If only that Watchmen Babies could be released to the public. If only.
Eskimo. Heather Duke underlined a lot of things in this copy of Moby Dick, but I believe the word Eskimo, underlined all by itself, is the key to understanding Heather's pain. On the surface, Heather Duke was the vivacious young lady we all knew her to be. But her soul was in Antarctica, freezing with the knowledge of the way fellow teenagers can be cruel, the way that parents can be unresponsive. And as she writes so eloquently in her suicide note, the way that life can suck. We'll all miss Sherwood's little Eskimo. Let's just hope she's rubbing noses with Jesus.
Is this turnout week or what?
All right. Well, I guess this will wrap things up for tonight's discussion on Heathers. If you guys have any comments, questions, and or concerns, if you have angry, angry emails, you can send them to fanholespodcast@gmail.com. If you want to check out the backlog of episodes of the Fanholes Podcast proper, you can check them out over on the Blogspot. That's fanholespodcast.blogspot.com. And we're on all kinds of social media. We're on Tumblr. We're on Twitter/X. We're on Facebook, Instagram. So we appreciate all the likes, hearts, shares, and retweets that we receive. And we can be found on streaming. Just go ahead and type in Fanholes on your favorite podcatcher of your choice. And that's going to do it. So this is going to be Derek WC, signing off.
This is Justin, signing off.
When I was just a songs. This was her wise reply. Que sera, sera. Whatever will be. The future's not ours to see. Que sera, sera. Thank you.
they were talking about this, like they said, it's like they were saying something to the effect of either you are a person who high school is like the best years of your life, or you were a person where high school like sucked and you were miserable or whatever. And I'm like, I don't know. Both? I don't know that that's kind true. Yeah. Cause I feel like I had moments of both where, I mean, I certainly can relate to being miserable at points. Yeah. Right. But you know, like when we talked about Our Man and you had your moments where like you were the man and shit. I mean, everybody had moments like that in high school. I mean, like it's one thing. It's not like, I mean, it's certainly not like an Al Bundy thing. It's not like, oh, 4 touchdowns in one game and that's all he fucking talks about. And that's his one moment in high school of greatness. Right. Like, it's not like that, but there were multiple moments like that. Like, and I guess also, you know, like it's that weird Watchmen effect, you know, the, you know, Silk Spectre thing of, even though I got raped back then, that was some of the greatest days of my life type thing or whatever. You know what I mean? Like where it's like there were some bad shit that went down during high school. And that girl I talked about, like we didn't really date and we had a sort of Sam Diane frenemy thing going on for the longest time. But you know, there were plenty of things where we did shows together and I felt like, you know, I mean, I don't know, I could be wrong, but I felt like, you know, there was some level of technical actor respect between the two of us and everything. And what I thought was really funny was when it was the senior prom, like she brought this one doofless fuck and I asked, you know, some chubbatha who I felt bad for. And I didn't want to deal with any of these other chicks because I had, you know, tried dating some girls and then it turned ugly or there were other things that turned ugly, you know, me, the high turnover or whatever. So at that point I was like, oh, all my whatever, you know, girls I actually liked that were quote unquote options, like there were no longer options. And I was just like, well, I need to go with somebody or whatever. And so I asked that one girl, but what was funny was it was almost like, it was like a double date. And I felt like, I mean, maybe I'm, you know, coloring it like better than it was, but I almost looked at it like, well, even though we didn't officially ask one another to go, it's like, I had more fun with her and I kind of felt like she had more fun with me on that stupid senior cruise thing than our dates had, if that makes sense. I don't know. So I don't know. It's like one of those things where I remember times where things with me and that girl were awful, but I also remember moments like that where I was like, well, I mean, we didn't exactly go to the senior whatever it is, cruise together or whatever, but we sort of did in a weird way too, you know? So, but I mean, that's at least how I choose to remember it. So,